Anybody way in the back have a question? In the other room?
Yeah, I just wonder if... can you hear me? I just wonder if I missed something here. Since the storm, I kept on thinking, was the Picayune always been this good, or has something happened?
Section.
I think the citizenry is really proud of you guys for your award, but...
Yeah, we were actually pretty good.
I was going to say.
No, I think as we learned, as everyone did, people step forward, and in times of crisis, and it goes back to what I was mentioning before. I really understand better now how we're a little weird. You know, journalists are just wired up a little differently. You know, we run toward instead of away, and we see obstacles and go through them and around them. And Katrina, for us, on a professional level, the ultimate test. Of how much can you take, you know, how much, you know, it's not that we're fearless, because there were a lot of times we were all afraid at one point or another during this, it's just that we're too stupid to know better, and really you get reconnected with why you went into journalism. We could all make more money doing something else, but you have a sense of mission about it, and the people who did the best during the storm had some sense of mission about it. I think that's true of any group of, as I mentioned, first responders. You have to really feel the mission of it in order to do a good job.
You know, I appreciate the comment, first of all, and I will tell you, I think we feel closer to our readers than ever before because this is a very shared experience. There's no doubt about that. I do think that being a journalist in New Orleans these days, a streak of self-regulated insanity really helps. You need to be understanding this is going to be a very stressful environment. But as to how the paper reacted, I just think we're a lot like every other organization, and I put it real simply. I tell people that Katrina did not build character. It revealed it. And you saw that across the city, and you saw that across our state. And there's a lot of people you'd never heard of that you know now, like Russell Honoré. Who'd ever heard of Russell Honoré? Well, he got things done. Doug Thornton over at the Superdome. Denise Thornton, his wife. And these people are all over the place, and the Katrina cleanup crew. So we've seen people emerge that we didn't know, and now we'll never forget them.
You know, a lot of our work, we owe it to you. I was talking just last week with our reporter, a former colleague of ours who's now working for the Chicago Tribune, and she was telling me how she's down here to do stories about the anniversary, and she's going around talking to people, trying to get people's stories, and she said that the when the conversation turns and people open up is when she say, I used to work here for the Picayune, and bam, people just... The pouring, it just comes out. And as a testament to what you have done, which is share, I mean, we can go and report what we see, but we cannot know what you went through unless you tell us. And so thank you for telling us.
You know, I want to share one thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about, and James had a slide of it, but, you know, we were knocked off our press for 3 days. We were online only for 3 days. And that fourth day, that Friday, we printed the paper again, and by then we'd established contact, and I asked them to send me about 500 papers. And I said, and they said, well, what do you want 500 papers for? I said, I'm going to take them to Convention Center Boulevard and give these papers to these people. And if you could have seen what happened to me when I showed up, imagine sitting there for 3 days around the clock, the hot sun, no information, no anything, and now a guy with a Times-Picayune shirt and a stack of papers shows up. I got mobbed. And it was so heartening. I handed out those papers as fast as I could, and people would say, can I have one for my mother? She's in a wheelchair over there. And I walked down Convention Center Boulevard until I gave them all away. And as I walked back down the street to my car, I saw people sitting on the side of the road, all these papers opened up and reading them. And I've never forgotten it, and it really reminds you that the Times-Picayune was a symbol of them, to them, of normalcy and of New Orleans. And it's something that we're very proud of.
And speaking of journalism, I wasn't a journalist with a capital J before the
yes,
before
were.
The storm. But my advice would be, if you're going to go out and pretend to be a journalist, surround yourself with people who you can imitate. And that's really true. When we got back that night, you know, that first night, I could write paragraphs of description, but it took James to make it into a story. I was shot. And in the Walmart, I didn't know what to do. And I saw Michael Pearlstein walk up to a police officer who was pushing a cart of stolen material and ask her, what's going on here? What are you doing? And so my education, you know, was going on, you know, during the beginning of the storm. Speaking of journalism.
You know, he learned very well. I got to tell one Doug McCash story. This is like maybe 5 weeks in. So we've basically been reduced to whatever little clothing we have and any food we can find. And I walk back into our makeshift bureau. It's about 1,000 degrees out. And I see Doug McCash, no shirt on, just a pair of shorts and nasty shoes.
He had really long hair then.
Laying on an air mattress, spread eagle like a crucifix pose, branches and all kinds of crap in his hair. And he's looking, and I said, "What the hell happened to you?" And he says, "I've just returned from a very dramatic 11-cat rescue."
Jesus Christ. You
love it. The Times-Picayune staff rescued a lot of pets. I would also say that it also speaks to the advantage of living a story that we're also reporting. It can have its disadvantages because we don't have our usual dispassionate distance from a story, but one of the things that journalists are always striving for is a connection with the subject of our interviews, you know, to really get them to talk about their feelings in a real and profound way. And now we go up to an interview and I'll say, "Where'd you live, Gentilly?" They say, "Where you live?" I said, "Lakeview." We all know each other's stories right there. They know I know what they've gone through. I know what they've gone through. And they talk to us. The people that we report on really tell us their stories because they know that we understand what they've been through, and that's a huge advantage to us.
I have a question which would relate to your ongoing work, and I've read in the papers about the ongoing story about floodgates at the 17th Street Canal and the London Avenue Canal, and I'm still curious about exactly how they will open and close and how that will operate, and there may be stories that have covered that, but the only thing I saw just a couple days ago, I guess, it looked like a crane would lower a section of concrete wall, and they said something about how the cranes couldn't operate if the winds were above 30 miles an hour. Well, so
you're correct on all that. Here's the deal on the floodgates. They're going to be automated at some point, but not this year. So this year only, they have to open and close them with cranes, and the dilemma is that you have to move the cranes away if the winds get too high, which could force them to make the call on lowering the gates sooner than we'd want and would compromise the pumping ability. Believe me when I tell you that the number one risk facing you in this part of the city and everywhere else is not so much from a hurricane surge right now. It's from rainfall flooding that cannot be pumped out. And it's a real trade-off we're making, and it's temporary. After year one, it should be more automated, and the walls should be able to withstand the water more. But as of right now, we're more precarious than we want to be, and we need till June of 07 to be in much better shape than we are now.
Well, in some sense, you're right. In another sense, the 17th Street Canal pumping station is one of the engineering wonders of the world. Its ability to move water is virtually unparalleled anywhere. So to duplicate that with any kind of sort of smaller pump operation, you're talking about a multi-year project to move that pumping station to the lake where it should have been all along, and at one time was on the edge of the city, is a massive public engineering works project, because that is a huge piece of pumping works. And it's really hard to duplicate that with anything that's, the pumps, if you go to the 17th Street Canal and look at the pumps they have there, they look really impressive. They're big, and they look powerful, and they look like they can move a lot of water, but it's 15% of the capacity of the 17th Street Canal pumping station. So
the point is, why can't they get, or let's take 100 of those? They can't find 100 pumps in the whole world to bring down there? I'm just talking about the temporary situation. I just don't understand that.
I don't think portable pump can pump enough water.
But 100 of them might do better than what we have now. And then they shake. I mean, that's the beauty now. Have they tested these things before? But,
I feel you. We feel your anger. We really do. We're with it. We're totally with it.
Right. Guy, and, and I've done numerous tours. And one time they said, "How do you feel about this?" And I've never said this in public. I said, "I am pissed."
We all are. Yeah.
And I think it really got the point across.
Yeah.
But in the last 2 days, I've heard 17 times that they've already sent $110 billion. If I hear it one more time, I'm going to scream.
All of these guys but me were wiped out.
On a lighter note, gentlemen, I'm glad to know you rescued some of your pets, and I do want to let you know that some of them are still living up in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, where I live. If you'd like to come and get them, we welcome you, but we would like for you to bring some picayunes with you when you come. Is there any way you can persuade your advertisers and your financial guys that you all are not a local paper only. You are a regional paper.
You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
We are so distressed that we cannot reach
you. We'll give you the phone number of the publisher's office after we leave.
I've done it. And I'm not the only one. Travel agents in Hattiesburg and Gulfport, we all would like to have your paper back. So I wish you would put a little pressure on them. And we'll keep your kitty cats a little bit longer till you can get back on feet.
Thank you. As it relates to the current hurricane season and the temporary pumps that obviously my lady here is very distressed about, what do we really have in terms of pumping capacity? Because I'm under the impression, based on what I've read in the paper, that they basically all have to be reworked. They all vibrate. They all have some sort of dynamic problem in the impellers on the inside and everything. So I don't know whether we're in condition in the current hurricane season to do the pump around of the gates if the gates are closed, or so are we now subject to basically leaving the gates open in the current season?
Well,
or is that repaired now?
Yeah, ideally, the gates stay open the entire year because we don't need to close them.
Right.
There's a twofold problem in that they have to shut the gates sooner than they want because they don't think the flood walls, which are still under repair, can handle more than a 5-foot surge, 5 foot above what the lake is now. Lake's 1 foot above sea level as it is. So we do have compromised pumping. We are writing about this every day trying to find out what's going on with the vibrating pumps. But, you know, if you want to pull for something, the thing to pull for is that the track of any storm doesn't force water into the lake and doesn't have a lake-related surge would be the best thing that could happen to us, because when the gates are open, you have no loss of pump capacity. It's just like it always was. But, we are in the heart of hurricane season. Everybody talks about it being 5 months long. Everybody here should know New Orleans hurricane season is actually August 20th through October 1st. 75% of the storms and all of the major storms have hit in that six-week period, which we are sitting right in the middle of right now.
To answer your question, I think generally the pumping capacity at 17th, I don't know the overall system, but at 17th, which is the biggest piece, it's when the installed pumps aren't working, it's under 10%, and when the installed pumps are working, it's about 15%, give or take, of what the 17th can pump on its own.
Looking to the future, try to get that paper all the way up to Natchez, because that's where I go, and it's very boring up there. But but really, looking to the future, what we really need at a day-to-day basis, outside of staying dry, and maybe we could have Walmart bring in truckloads of Pampers or something, but what we really do need is an investigation of Entergy. Nobody can understand how it is that we're the greatest energy-producing state in the Union, and yet we're going to be killed by these rising energy costs. Meanwhile, they sell electricity to other states, and somehow this all gets lost in the vast world of economics, which seems to be as obtuse as the way our government works. But if you could get some really smart reporters to find out how it is that they're stealing from us.
I think we probably have time for one more, huh? Two more. As many as you want.
I'm delighted to be able to be visiting here today from Washington, D.C., the local city, not the federal enclave, the local city. We also have plenty of problems with the Corps of Army Engineers, so we feel your anger. I've appreciated the discussion here today of the technical aspects of the problem. And I, without having a very focused question, I wonder if you all could comment a little bit on the thinking in the city and how you are as journalists investigating the thinking on the city on the issue of the equities in the situation here, the social equities, and the opportunities that this catastrophe has presented for the city to evolve and become stronger. What are the equities that are being struggled with here? What are the opportunities and what are the odds?
Housing, education. It's much harder for the poor people who were displaced to get back. You notice that FEMA paid for people's transportation out of New Orleans, but they haven't offered to pay for people's transportation back home. So those of us who can afford to get back are here, and a lot of people who want to come back but can't afford it can't get back. They don't have housing, and so it's a huge issue. There are opportunities. It's interesting to look at the school system as an example. Probably the most, you know, we're conducting an experiment in education right now, because while other cities debate whether they should have charter schools, and we have 28 charter schools in town, we have competitive schools, public schools in town, They're still not nearly the resources that they need in order to do an effective job, but you actually have, you know, they had an event at the arena a while back where people could go pick a school. And that's been sort of the cutting edge of education reform, public education reform in this country for the last 20 years. And we were forced to do it, but it does provide opportunities to call schools to account and make them make them better, hopefully, to serve the lowest, the most disadvantaged of our population. But the equity, I think, is a huge issue in terms of people's ability to get back. I don't know.
The greatest inequity to me is that right now there's been a great focus on homeowners, and the Road Home program, which is underway right now, will help in that regard. There is nothing for the people who rent it.
Right.
And if you have a renter's policy, it did not cover the flood. And this is a city where half the people rent. So right now we have done nothing to help them account for their loss of everything they own, and I think that is a major hole in going forward. In talking about the future, you know, this can become an overwhelming issue, so you have to break this down. And my practical guide to what I would do if I ran the city would be I would obviously focus, you've got to fix the flood protection. No one's going to live here if they don't think they're safe from flooding. That has to be done. If you do that and then say, we're going to put in a great urban public school system and we're going to have a low crime rate, we're going to do those two things with the flood protection, you don't need to worry about anything else. It's a great place to live. People still move for great schools and low crime. So instead of getting caught up in all the possible problems we could have, focus on the fundamentals, and I think the rest of things will really come along.
Are you
No. I do tell the mayor that, though, every time I see him.
I'm just curious, with all of the shenanigans that went on between the state, local, and federal government, do you feel that any of that posturing is gone away? How strong is the difference? I mean, I actually had a FEMA guy tell me early on when I was on the North Shore that if Jeb Bush had been our governor, we would not be sitting in the problems that we were sitting in at that time. I mean, it took weeks for FEMA to set up an office, even on the North Shore.
You got to. There's two ways to look at it. Right after the storm, the performance was horrible. The federal government has come in with a lot of money, although it's constantly overstated. When you hear that figure quoted, they're always including insurance payments, flood insurance payments, which, by the way, you're paying for. So you really can't count that as free aid. You purchased a policy. You're collecting on a policy that you paid
and
for.
And the money they gave the SBA.
Right.
The SBA loan money that
right.
SBA got to loan us to rebuild our homes that were destroyed also counts in that money.
But if you're asking will the posturing stop, no, I don't think the posturing will stop as long as politics are politics.
Well, the president's down the street saying we stand with you just right now, so.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Please join in me in
thanking
our panelists.
Thank you.